Huh? Oh. Oh, see, you're actually right. You're actually right on target. It wasn't the topic that I was planning. A few people asked me over the week. A few people asked me over the week if I'm going to speak about the elections, and I wasn't planning on it. But I'm going to spend about 60 to 90 seconds, just because. I'll just say one thing from a little bit of a different angle. The elections are over, right? What can we get out of it? What would have been good if it happened? This, that. The truth is, I follow politics on a level of reading headlines every so often. That's the extent to which I follow politics, so I'm not the big maven on politics. I do know one thing. It seemed to me, a few months ago, my impression was that everybody was under the impression that A, Romney would win, up till about, I don't know, is it a few months ago, and that B, then things would be much better for the Jews in Eretz Yisrael. And big disappointment, from what I understand. I just remember having a little bit of a feeling then that, oh, it's nice to know that, you know, we're going to go back to a more of a friendly situation. But then suddenly it hit me that, on the other hand, that's a little bit dangerous. The feeling that we're going to be okay because the right guy is going to be in office is a dangerous feeling. So, it's done. The elections are over. We're not going to change that. Let's at least realize that on the contrary, we can get bracha out of it by saying to ourselves, if so, maybe we can find someone better to rely on than Romney. Right? Let's say, Hashem, we're in good hands. The more we sense that, meaning the less of other people we have in the way, the more we sense that, the more he'll be there for us. So let's at least just come away with that. That's just very general, basic perspective. Without getting into the particulars, which I don't really know. Okay. Exactly. Very true. We're not in charge of results. Hashem decides at the end of the day what the result should be. Right. Very good. Very good. So you're making a deeper point that I wasn't gonna get into, but it's worthwhile. And that is that exactly whatever is going on is actually being manipulated by Hashem, and we shouldn't think that we can beat it by this, that. Do the ishtablis, and then we say, let's see what Hashem has in mind. Okay. Whoa. Oh, boy. Oh, quite so. That's a very chashuv thing to keep in mind as the Israeli elections approach. You have people saying, you know, this will happen, that will happen, nothing. Sharon, you were talking about Sharon. Everybody knew that Sharon was going to make Israel into a better place to live, get to deal with the Arabs. We all knew that, right? It's always the same story. The state will be what Hashem wants it to be, and all the rest are just puppets. Yeah.
One of the things I recently got from his check, is that I believe that going around this, you understand that 100 million people voted, this guy got 49 million something. So that's a wake up call.
Bezos Hashem. Okay. Now our subject. Try to picture the following scenario in a realistic perspective. You wake up one morning and you find on your doorstep, you've heard this already. You wake up one morning and you find on your doorstep a package. You open the package, it's full of cash. $1 million. $10 million. Make the story better. $10 million. On the package, it says your name. That's all. Now, again, try to picture this in a real way. You wake up one morning, find that outside of your door. A package, $10 million, and your name on it. You're a mature, responsible person. You would like $10 million. I would. But you're not a kid. What's your reaction going to be? I think... What were you going to say?
Wonder where this is coming from.
Oh. I think that a person would get a little nervous before he gets excited. It would take a very superficial, very unintelligent or immature person to say, great, let's go. Right? A mature, intelligent person is going to be nervous. What is going on here? There's something wrong. Is this... Am I being framed? What... Where is this going to lead to? You won't know what to do next. Should you call an attorney? Should you call the cops? Should you make sure not to call the cops? What do I do? Meaning, an intelligent person doesn't just figure, well, it's here, let me use it. Nobody's doing this sort of thing for no reason. And nobody decided, well, it's a bit heavy, let me find the nearest door. The truth is that we in our lives should be bothered by this mystery. Now the truth is we're born knowing the answer. Well, let's step back for a moment. Our subject tonight really is Avraham Avinu. A person looks at his body, should be bothered by the same question. The Chazon Ish says that an intelligent person should go nuts from this question. Again, we have some justification for not going nuts. We'll see soon that we should also go a little bit nuts. We have some justification for this, for not going nuts, because we know the answer. But an intelligent guy, an intelligent Ben Noach, okay, what Avraham Avinu was, what all the other people in his generation were, if you were to wake up in the morning and see your body and appreciate what your body is, let's say you would wake up at age 40 and see your whole body, you start trying different things, you see what each thing does. So what's the reaction? Is the reaction, well, I've got a tongue, it works, there are hamburgers out there, let's get busy? Or do you say, what happened here? What's this about? The general answer is, Lamaisa, most people's response is the former. Got a mouth? Where's the food? Got eyes? Where are the sights to see? Let's get busy. Why? What do you mean why? I have it. Let's go. Right? Now, why aren't people astounded? Really, the Chaim Salvavit says that there are three primary reasons why people don't go nuts from this. First of all, you're born with it. When you're born, you don't have your intelligence developed. By the time you grow up, you're used to it. It's not astounding anymore. You don't suddenly get shocked at your hands or at your eyes or at your heart at the age of 30. Right? It's old news. That's number one. Number two is, even if you were to start thinking about it, there's something else distracting you. You're already at a stage in life where you're working towards the next stage. We're always busy focused on what we want. What don't I have yet? Oh, Shkayach, I have hands. But look at the next guy just renovated his house. Everybody has hands. And therefore, that also distracts us from taking note of what we have. When you think about it for a minute, you're about a person who needs Rachmana Litzlan, kidney transplant or a heart transplant. How much would a person pay? How much would a person pay for a surgery to save his hand? We're talking in the hundreds of thousands of dollars, if not more. So realize that you have a thing, a gadget, that costs more than all these great technological things that are coming out every other week. Something that people would pay up $500,000 for. Just we're not astounded again because we're used to it. We're used to it. And since we're from, we have another problem. As soon as someone points out to you, we say, yeah, I know the answer, Hashem. Hashem made it. So you still don't need to be astounded. Now, let's forget us for a minute. Let's back up to Avraham Avinu. When we're talking about Avraham Avinu, we have to realize that Avraham Avinu is a sugya. It's like a sugya of Gemara that has to be studied. We have to realize, we have to try to retrace his steps and understand what was this man, how did he reach the heights that he reached. Avraham Avinu, if we want to just get a bit of an idea of what his greatness is, note that before Avraham Avinu, there were great, in Avraham Avinu's time, there were great people around. There was Shem and Aver. Noach was still alive when Avraham Avinu was born. Yet, when Avraham Avinu appears on the scene, the whole focus of the Torah focuses in on him. And Shem, with all of his greatness, recedes to the background. Which means that when Avraham came on the scene, he completely knocked anybody else out of the ballpark. Tell you what, we're going to back up a little more, and then we'll get back to where we're going. What is Torah? Torah is not the story of the Jewish people. It's not a history of the Jewish people. The Torah is describing Hashem's focus, or Hashem's agenda in this world. If we see that the Jewish people are the focal point of the Torah, it's not because the Torah is the story of the Jewish people. It's because the Torah, the Jewish people are the focal point of Hashem, which means that the Jewish people are the focal point of the world. They are the story of the creation. Note how, from the beginning of the Torah, how the Torah works. What's the first pasuk in the Torah? Note that there's a big imbalance in the first pasuk of the Torah. Bereishis bara Elokim et ha-shamayim ve-ha-aretz. Hashem created heaven and earth. Is that balanced? Is that balanced? Heavens and earth, are those two sides of the scale? Not at all. Earth is one tiny speck of what heavens entails. But yet, heaven and earth. In the next pasuk, we forgot about heaven already. With all the immensity, the Torah zooms in. Earth. Right? What's going on? Wait a minute. A little bit of a description of outer space. Nothing? It's immense. Nothing? The answer is because in the scheme of things, the Torah is describing, yeah, heavens is immense, and if we're actually going to describe to you what's involved in the creation of heavens, it's as infinite as space is. But the Torah is telling us, the Torah is outlining Hashem's objective, Hashem's agenda in this world. Hashem's agenda is clearly earth. Earth is the arena where Hashem's purpose in the world is going to be fulfilled. So let's zoom in on earth. That's right. No, there's a heaven. Realize, there's a heaven that's in the background. That's the setting. It's part of the setting. But now let's focus on earth. Okay? We focus on earth because that's the focal point. So the Torah describes what happened on earth. Well, First Hashem, in two brief psukim, Hashem set up, how do you pronounce it? Topography.
That's a word,
yeah. Hashem set up the topography of the world. That's when Hashem said, Yikavu Amayim. Hashem set it all up. That's two words, okay? Hashem also set up the atmosphere in order to make it livable. Also a couple of words. Yirokia b'soy chamayim. Initially, it was all liquid. Hashem said, two words, let there be an atmosphere. You ever studied the atmosphere? Right? Atmosphere is an amazing thing. You can't live anywhere. Again, like we said, space is immense. There's a tiny belt around this tiny ball, Earth. That's the only place man could survive. And it's very, very complex. A couple of quick words. The Torah makes short shrift of it, right? An atmosphere, topography, make the Earth a livable place. Let's clear off some room here on Earth so we can have a stage. Right? Rest of the world is water. We're not going to focus on that right now. We're moving on. Plant life. Torah is moving fast, right? Okay, plant life happened. Plant life happens. You know what's involved in that? Volumes and volumes and volumes. Yeah, move on. Okay, animal life burst into existence. Okay, we break it into a couple of stages. First is the fish and the birds and mammals. The Torah is moving quickly. And then the Torah slows down. All of a sudden there's a whole preface. One minute. You're elaborating on man? The complexity that you just described in a few short words in the previous psukim, so much man in proportion to that is nothing. But yet the Torah moves through that quickly. It's continuing that zooming process, right? Zooming in on man. Everything else is just the background. Don't worry about that. That's the setting. That's the background. Man! Oh! Relatively, there's a lot of length there. Because again, Hashem's focal point, when we're talking about Hashem's focal point, what's the story of the world? We zoom in on Earth. In Earth, we zoom in on man. Okay, we know that Adam HaRishon, Noach, families start developing, mankind starts spreading, and then all of a sudden we see this zoom effect again. Avraham Avinu appears on the scene. Oh, forget about the millions of people that we've just described as filling the earth, right? This, that. Again, zooms in all of a sudden. The story of all the galaxies is about that one man, that one member of mankind on Earth in the immense galaxy. Go through the galaxies, it's all just to get to Earth. All of Earth is all just to get to mankind, which is all just to get to that one man. Avraham Avinu becomes the story of the world. That's what the Torah is doing in Parshas Lech Lecha. When it zeroes in on Avraham Avinu, everything else recedes into the background. Avraham Avinu is the story of the world. Why is Avraham Avinu the story of the world? Yeah, when he appeared on the scene, even the great people of his time faded. It's like when the sun comes, the stars become invisible. There are stars. The stars are bright. Once the sun is on the scene, they're insignificant. Avraham Avinu appeared on the scene, everybody else faded. And that's who we are. So let's study a little bit. Let's retrace his steps. We're going to follow the path of the first Baal Tshuva in history. That's really what happened here. What was it that made Hashem become so enamored with Avraham Avinu that, again, let's realize, millions of people, each person is a whole story, but Hashem zooms in on Avraham. And the answer starts with what we began discussing. Avraham Avinu was a thinker. Avraham Avinu did not take things for granted. He was the first person in 10 generations to wake up and say, why do I have such a perfect body? It didn't happen by itself. Everybody else was handed a body and they headed off for the restaurant. They headed off for all the things that they did, whatever it is. What did everybody believe in? A world of gods. It wasn't really a one creator of everything. all kinds of gods, each with their properties, all kinds of people. The people kind of have to interact with the gods, and whatever it is. There are mightier gods, there are less mighty gods. The sun is a supreme power, right? The moon is okay, second place. Wind is a god. But there's no central god, there's no... And everybody, you kind of have to fight for yourself. It's survival of the fittest. You have to know how to manipulate the gods and figure yourself out. Now, Avraham Avinu said, one minute. It's not just like that. It's not that I was born into just this balagan of haphazard sorcery. And something. This is very planned. The body is a very, very unique structure. What's the secret here? He noticed all kinds of things that we should take notice of. Why are the sharp teeth in the front and the broader teeth in the back? Try to picture for a minute how it would be if it was the opposite. Picture biting into an apple. If you had the sharp teeth in the back and the molars in the front, which are which? What are the front teeth called?
Incisors.
So imagine trying to bite into an apple with the molars in the front and the incisors in the back. The process will be very interesting every time. First you try with the molars, that's a natural way of doing it. It's at the front. You'd give up. And then you'd tear your cheek trying to force the apple into the back where you can get to it with the incisors. Is it by chance that the incisors are in the front and the molars are in the back? Think about that for a minute. Avraham Avinu didn't think about it for a minute. Avraham Avinu was bothered by the question. Why? Why are my fingers so perfect? You have four fingers. First of all, just think about the very fact. Imagine if they were together like a mitten. You'd still be able to drive just the same, basically. Writing would be complicated. All kinds of fine motor things that you never think about would be very complicated. They're split apart. And then, wonder of wonders, you have a thumb that can even either work in the same line together with them, or it can come to give you that counter effect. You want to catch something right, you have the thumb working against the other fingers. And you can switch it. It comes with a perfect mechanism. You can use it either way. It's multifunctional. Right? And it doesn't get in the way. It's not just like this. Imagine trying to bang on the table if your thumb was stuck here. No. You can move it out of the way. It comes with hinges. Someone did that. Why did someone do that? Who did it and why? Avraham Avinu was bothered by this question. He lost nights of sleep. And he was noticing a lot more things to this also. He was noticing one thing after the other. As soon as he noticed there are things going on here, someone's been at work here, what else has that someone done? And then he noticed that he has a knee just in the right place. You have a picture trying to catch a bus without your leg bending in the middle? It's very convenient to have it set up that way. Try a little bit. I recommend trying it once. You walk home from shul on Shabbos. Walk halfway without bending your knee. Okay, we'll say yes. Okay, fine. Of course, we have a knee. Notice that it was put there. It was put there. Avraham Avinu started understanding that someone has been doing things. Someone has been doing things. And he was determined to figure out why? What is that someone doing and why? What does he want from me? So first, and again, Avraham Avinu, we have to say first and foremost, if we're talking chronologically, I don't know quality-wise, but chronologically, his first virtue was that he was a thinker. He was a thinker. He didn't take things for granted. He thought into things. When a person becomes an active thinker, he's going to get very, very far. Shlomo HaMelech says, "Mayim amukim eitza b'lev ish." The counsel in the heart of man is very deep. The ish tvunai sidleno, and it takes a man of understanding to draw it out. I've heard it said that man utilizes about 5% of his mental capabilities, which means that there's so much more mental capabilities in us that we just don't dip into. I would guess, that's what I heard said, I would guess that the average frum Jew who learns, if they would study God, would probably be more like 30%. I don't know. I would imagine that we're all bigger thinkers than your average Frank Goy. But still, you have to realize that your seichel is very, very, very deep. There's a lot you can get to. That's what Avraham Avinu did. We mentioned this idea the other night when we learned Kuzari. The idea that most of us use our seichel, which is a very, very powerful tool, just in order to get through the day. Just as a response to things that come up. Just as a way of dealing with challenges. Right? Figure out how to get food. Challenge comes your way. You got to think about it a little bit. And that's basically the extent of what the seichel is used. But when you start tapping into the deeper levels of seichel, you'll start discovering all kinds of things. And Avigdor Miller recommended this, and I could say I tried it. It works. You would be shocked to discover the depth of your seichel. If you have never actually exercised, tried, active, initiated thinking, not just thinking in response to something. See, even a lot of the learning that we do, learning, real learning, is information is bounced at us and we absorb it. We think enough in order to be able to comprehend what we're learning. Reading a Gemara, you think enough in order to be able to get what's being said, but still, is there active, creative thought going on? You decide, now I'm going to initiate a thought process. If you exercise this, you'll be shocked with what you come up with. Rabbi Avigdor Miller said this, I decided. He's not telling me he did it. He's telling me if you try it, you'll be shocked. I figured I'll try it. I tried it, and I was shocked. What are you going to think about? How do you do this? I'll just give the answer that he gave, and I found this worked for me. Make a plan for yourself over the next week just to think about the parsha. Okay? You know the story of the parsha 60 years already. You know it since you're 4. It stayed the same parsha over those 60 years. Yeah, right? Once we already know the story well, we don't bother analyzing it anymore. And it often just stays at that same 6-year-old level understanding. Try, decide that when you're walking through the street, when you have spare time on your hands, that your mind doesn't need to be busy, you're driving, you're waiting online, when you're doing things that don't involve your mind, decide, I am now going to focus on the story of the parsha. I'm going to really try to just think about the story and picture it in real terms. Picture it in mature, real terms. It's a story of real life people. Not these fairy tale people who bounce around on camels. Right? Think about the people on the camels were people like you. With your feelings, try to think of it in those terms. When you start thinking about the parsha, whatever parsha it is, if you're really making a focused effort of just analyzing the story in a sustained way, you're going to come up with problems. Things that don't fit. Things that seem strange. Don't stop there. Continue thinking. You're going to discover very amazing insights that you will be the author of. Try it. Try it. When you start seeing what you can come up with, so I did this, I followed his advice, and I followed his next part of the advice, is take a notebook and write the things that you come up with down. When you look at them years later, you'll be amazed. I decide that? Profound thoughts. Try it. You'll start seeing that there's a lot more to you than you thought. There's a lot more to you than you thought. It doesn't just have to be Parsha. Parsha is one example. Let's get back to what we were talking about. Avraham Avinu, so that's what he was doing. A sustained thought process that went on and on. He never let up. When he discovered a level of understanding, he was always bringing it to the next level. So there is somebody doing these things. He didn't owe me anything, and yet he decided to give me these hands. That's also something to focus on. Sometimes it's not, when we're talking about thinking, it's an issue of taking things that you already know, but really absorbing them to an extent that you start living it in a bigger way. For example,
opposite of it would seem to me that the parsha is probably even a little bit too big, that a person, if they could, start off just focusing on the just think about the possibility of the bracha. Over the bracha.
That's true. Let me. That's true. I was going to say something even simpler.
Right.
Let me say something even simpler. Saying the truth is like saying. It doesn't have to be parsha. It can be any particular tefillah. But let's say something even more. Look at your hand. Look at your hand and focus on the fact that this was given to you as a gift. I know that already. Yeah. Do it anyways. Look at your hand and realize that when you were being created, there was a conscious decision. This person, I'm going to give him a hand. Hashem didn't have to give it to you. Of course I have a hand. I'm a human being. Human beings have hands. Not all human beings have hands. So the natural reaction to that is, okay, sometimes something messes up. But the truth is that it's exactly the opposite. Rachmana litzlan, sometimes it messes up. Not that it messed up. Sometimes Hashem does that in order for the other people to realize that they do have hands. But the truth is that as you stood in line and Hashem was giving out hands, Hashem looked at you and He decided He's going to grant you hands. Could have been. What would be if Hashem would say, oh, I'm sorry. The next batch hasn't arrived yet, but we can't wait. Move on. No. Hashem made sure that you were going to have hands. This was a conscious decision on Hashem's part. Think of it in a personal way. It's not an automatic thing. Hashem decided He's creating a you. And He decided, I'm going to give this person eyes. I'm going to give this person a nose. Think a little bit about what that means. Hashem thought it. Hashem had a big appreciation of the nose He was giving you. We don't see it. But go through life using it all the time, benefiting without. So focus on your hand a little bit. Look at it. And focus on the fact that this was a personal gift, a personalized gift. It's hard to feel that when everybody around you has hands also. But yes, for Hashem, it was a personalized gift to you. Look at your hand and think about that for a minute. A minute is a long time for this. Sounds like a short time. But a minute is a long time for this. Avraham Avinu did that. By doing that, he started developing deep feelings for Hashem. He started developing deep feelings for Hashem. And he started gaining all the more of a, first of all, puzzled. Why? What's the purpose of it? And what does Hashem want from me? Like a person who discovered $1 million, the more he started appreciating, seeing the things left for him by Hashem all over the place. Right? You know, sometimes you come to somebody's house, let's say using their apartment, they're away. You come into the house and you see that they left chocolates for you on the table. And they thought of every last thing. You go into the bedroom and they left a book for you on the bed. These are personal touches. It's touching. Every time you see it, right? You get a warm feeling. This is not just a book lying here. You feel a connection. The person's gone. He flew last night. But there's a warm feeling that you get. A certain warm connection with that feeling, even though, with that person, even though you don't see him right now. Again, you're touched. This, that, one thing. Avraham Avinu started seeing one thing after the other. He saw his hands. That was something left for him by Hashem on the table. Chocolates left for him on the table with love. But he still didn't understand why. Then his next step was, what could Hashem want from me? Why? What's the idea? And here we're going to try to follow his thought process a little, even though we're obviously doing it in a very superficial way. Avraham Avinu was a career of thinking. Avraham Avinu, through this process of one insight which led to another, started developing a sense of what that someone must consider wrong and right. And it started like this. Avraham Avinu wondered, look at everything he's doing. Once I start picking up on it, I see it all over the place. Right? I see it everywhere. But at the same time, it's concealed. It's so clear, and yet it's so hidden. How's that? And Avraham Avinu had an insight. Again, we're saying this very quickly, one third after the other. Avraham Avinu had an insight. Apparently, he wanted humans to bring it out. Humans to discover it and bring it out. Apparently, he did not want to hand his identity to us on a silver platter. He wanted it to be our job. And all of a sudden, Avraham Avinu discovered a mission in this world. Hashem is concealing himself. I'm going to bring him out. We know Avraham Avinu is mainly characterized with two careers.
How did Avraham Avinu come to that conclusion that Hashem was hiding himself, so that we would bring him out? How did he figure out that was Hashem's...
In a very brief way, it came as a result of days, weeks, maybe months of thought. Maybe we don't know how long this thought process took. But this was the initial realization. If Hashem is keeping himself concealed, his idea was, it must be that we're meant to represent him. We have the seichel to be able to discover him. We're meant to represent him. We're meant to manifest his existence. And therefore, that was the first career that he embarked on. Representing Hashem, manifesting Hashem. And therefore we know he's characterized mainly by two activities. Calling out in the name of Hashem, spreading knowledge of Hashem, and chesed. Right? We'll get to chesed. But that was number one. His first realization was, Hashem is holding himself back, yet he's putting down enough hints. He wants human beings to bring it out. So that was the first career that he embarked on. Another thing that he very, very much sensed was, he was trying to figure out, this great benefactor, how can I figure out what he likes? How can I figure out what he wants? He's not telling me. Rav Avinu was 75 when he got his first nevuah. But how can I figure out what he wants? So he started studying what Hashem does. And the big realization was, the most obvious thing that he saw that Hashem was told as a value is chesed. Because he was seeing all over the place the marks of Hashem's chesed. That's what he experienced on himself. That was the first thing that he noticed about Hashem. What is Hashem's most outstanding characteristic, so to speak? Chesed. If so, Hashem was told chesed as a value. If Hashem holds chesed as a value, that's going to become a value for me too. And I'm going to turn that into a career. That's what Avraham Avinu's two big careers were. Representing Hashem, calling out in Hashem's name, and chesed.
What about his word, correct manner, trying to be a missionary?
Oh, that's the first element. That's the first element, representing Hashem. He's evangelizing. The way I would put it is, this is actually, here we're defining the two careers of Avraham Avinu. He endeavored to become an ambassador of Hashem in this world. And the understanding behind all of that was, and again, Rabbi Avigdor Miller expounds on this at much greater length, and he stresses that we are very briefly going through a lifetime of a thought process. But we're going to bring it out in the limited time that we have. But what's the idea behind it? What's going on here? Avraham Avinu discovered that Hashem, yes, there are these two supreme values, recognizing Hashem and chesed. And the greatest chesed that Hashem did for man is make himself available to man, that man can discover Hashem. And he discovered, the way he understood it was, Hashem is granting us the opportunity of joining him in these two campaigns. Hashem is saying, you're going to join me. You're going to be the one to represent me. You're going to be my ambassador. And this wasn't just Avraham Avinu. This is us. We're not talking about running out and evangelizing. We have enough work to do. First, we have to deal with Jews. And even before we deal with Jews, we have to deal with our family. And even before we deal with our family, we have to evangelize ourselves. But we have to realize that a very, very, very fundamental way of understanding our essence in life is manifesting Hashem. Manifesting Hashem through our speech, through our thoughts, through our deeds. I'm going to take that to a little bit of a deeper level in order to, even though as I said, when it comes to these shiurim, I'm about 45% through of what I had planned on saying. But to take this to... What's that? Yeah, I don't think we're going to cover it. Mezos Hashem. But let's take this to a little bit of a deeper level. Hashem is concealed in the physical world. Hashem has no physical expression. How can Hashem have physical expression nevertheless? How can Hashem nevertheless have physical expression? This is what our job is. We express Hashem. Now, we express Hashem through everything we do. Meaning, we're meant to. When you are tempted, let's say we'll talk in a very basic way. The McDonald's smells good. None of us are tempted by that. But you don't go in and eat. You like hamburgers. You're not going to go in and eat. You're going to wait till you get to Kosher Delight. Hey, we're here in Eretz Yisrael, grill burger. Okay? Why didn't you eat? The answer is because there's Hashem. You gave Hashem physical existence in this world. You gave Hashem physical expression in this world. You know what I'm saying? You expressed Hashem in a physical way. He's not physical. But the fact that you held back from that hamburger is expressing Hashem in the physical world. When you talk about Hashem, you're giving Hashem existence, physical existence in the physical world. When you think about Hashem, thinking about Hashem brings Hashem into the physical world. We're here to fill that gap. We're here to fill the vacuum. Hashem, kiviyachol, His presence is not manifest in this world. We manifest His presence. Person gets up and puts on tefillin in the morning. Why are you putting on tefillin? You are manifesting Hashem. You're showing there's a Hashem. What if nobody sees it? Are you still showing that there's a Hashem? Yes, because the nice Hashem is expressed in this world. You think about Hashem, Hashem is expressed in this world. This was a career that Avraham Avinu understood. Hashem is not expressing Himself in this world. It's left for us. It's left for us. Everything we do can be expressing Hashem in this world. Things that we do and things that we don't do. When you refrain from doing things because it's Hashem, naturally you should have done it. You're provoked. Naturally, you'd be yelling. You're not doing it? That's a lot of effort. You're expressing Hashem in the physical world. You make a bracha. Certainly, if you talk about Hashem, you're expressing Hashem in the physical world. This was a career that Avraham Avinu developed. Avraham Avinu developed it to such an extent. You ever wonder? Avraham Avinu was willing to be thrown into a fiery furnace. Let's note how mind-boggling it is. Today, we all have it in our genes. I think that all of us would throw ourselves into a fiery furnace. But let's remember where Avraham Avinu was. Avraham Avinu had developed his understanding of Hashem. Hashem had never made contact with him. He got his first nevuah later. Okay? This was all his understanding. He went through about 70 years of his life never having it openly corroborated. Hashem never appeared to him and told him, "You're right." And throughout those 70 years, he was thrown into the fiery furnace. What gave him the resolve to throw himself into the fiery furnace? No one told him he had to. We know that it's halacha. He was thrown in. He allowed himself to be thrown in. He could have avoided it. Right? Could have bowed down and could have agreed that Nimrod was right, and that was that. What made him do that? No one told him he had to. He saw this as the... He thought he would die. Avraham Avinu thought he would die. But he saw this as the greatest opportunity of his career. My whole career is about expressing that there is Hashem. What greater expression could there be than the fact that a person will die rather than deny it? That's the greatest cry of Hashem's existence. And that's really what the word Kiddush Hashem is. It's Chilul Hashem. You know what the word Chilul means? Chilul means empty. Chalal. When you bought an apartment, did you hear about the Chalal? It means the empty area that you can expand out into. Chilul means a vacuum. When a person... The world is a situation of Chilul Hashem. There's a vacuum. There's, so to speak, you don't see Hashem. That's Chilul Hashem. And when a person corroborates that through his actions, he's making a Chilul Hashem. When a person does an Aveira publicly, what's he showing? There isn't Hashem. He's showing vacuum. He's showing empty. Kiddush Hashem is the opposite. You are demonstrating there is Hashem. You're demonstrating there is Hashem through doing. You're demonstrating there is Hashem through not doing. You're demonstrating there is Hashem through what you say and through what you don't say. And Avraham Avinu said, what bigger demonstration could there be of Hashem's realness of the fact that a person is willing to be thrown into the fire rather than deny it? This was a career of demonstrating Hashem, of giving Hashem that physical expression, that physical representation. That's the greatness of our role. And Avraham Avinu took it all the way. But another point to realize in this point of his being willing to throw himself into the fiery furnace is the resolve. It's not just that he developed these understandings and starting and implementing it, but the resolve. That's also mind-boggling. A person develops his own understanding of right and wrong. Nobody's telling him to do it. He never had any contact with Hashem until later. Right? And yet he's willing to die for it. He's pushing it all the way. He's going to give his whole life for it. He's willing to suffer ridicule. He's willing to suffer persecution. And he's willing to leave his family. And he's willing to pick up his... to go to a foreign land where he doesn't know what's going to be. And he's going to lose his wife. We know the end of the story when he lost his wife, right? Okay, we know, Avraham Avinu, it's okay. In a couple of minutes it'll work out. As far as he was concerned, he lost his wife. Right, when Pare took her. He lost his wife. That midah of once I understand something is right, I'm going to stick with it all the way. That steel steadfastness was another aspect of Avraham Avinu's emunah that turned him into who he was. Okay, like I said, really just first starting to develop the subject and we're already almost finished. But just bring out one additional point. With chesed, this idea goes a step further. It's not just that we're representing Hashem through doing chesed and we understand that that's the value of this. Taking it a step further. And this is how we should view it in the chesed that we're doing. And the chesed will endeavor to do more. Ask a simple question. It's a very basic question. It's often asked. Hashem knows what he's doing, right? Hashem is very wise. He knows what he's doing. He made a person poor. That means that Hashem decided this person should be poor. What business do you have going and changing that? Yeah? Someone is sick. You going to help him out? What are you mixing into Hashem's business? Hashem knows what he's doing. What's the answer? So the truth is that Turnus Rufus asked Rabbi Akiva this question. Right? We mentioned Turnus Rufus the other day. There's a lot of good exchanges between Turnus Rufus and Rabbi Akiva. Turnus Rufus asked Rabbi Akiva this question a little bit of a different way, but Rabbi Akiva answered the question, answers our question too. Turnus Rufus asked Rabbi Akiva, Hashem doesn't like the poor. Look, he doesn't like them. Look what he did to them. Rabbi Akiva said, no, he does like them. So why did he make them poor? Rabbi Akiva answered, in order to give us the opportunity of giving them tzedakah. The way he expressed it was, in order to give us a ticket out of Gehenna. In other words, what's Rabbi Akiva saying? Hashem is busy giving chesed all the time. But you know what he says? He says, one minute, you're my children. You're part of my family. I want to train you into the family trade, and therefore you know what I'm going to do? Here I'm not going to do the chesed. You do it. That's what Hashem actually said. By making a person poor, what Hashem is telling the rest of us is, I do an awful lot of chesed. You're my child. I want you to be a part of the family trade. I want to train you to do what I do. Here I'm letting you try. I'm letting you fill this gap. That's what's actually going on. Whenever you see a person with tzaras, what Hashem is telling us is, you're my children, I want you to join me. I want you to be a part of what I do. This is what our family does. Your name is Hashemson? This is what Hashemsons do. That's what we are. We're in the family, and therefore Hashem says, this is what our family does. So Hashem says, here's your turn. A little bit, right? It's like my father used to do this sometimes. We're driving in the country. He'd say, come, now you can sit on my lap. I'm going to let go of the steering wheel. You hold on. That's what Hashem is doing. That's what Hashem is doing. Letting go a little bit, you hold on. Hashem is still covering the bulk of the chesed. Don't worry. You don't have to worry about the rain for the whole world that Hashem will see to. You don't have to worry about the sun providing the energy. Hashem is taking care of 99.999. Here and there, Hashem says, here, now I'm giving you a turn. I'm going to hold back a little bit. You do that. This is the career of chesed that Avraham Avinu developed. So here, okay, at the end I was rushing. Really discuss this for another 3 hours. I don't have time though. So we'll end here. But this is the legacy of Avraham Avinu that we come away with. It will sum it up: a career of thought, developing understanding of the significance of what's going on with our lives, a career of representing Hashem with everything that we do, and a career of joining Hashem in His worldwide campaign of chesed.